There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world
order. Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Radio.
And now for something completely different.
The country, this country is a fabulous country.
That's it? Is that it? Is that it? Where
obviously,
am I?
We have huge differences of opinion.
Lou found his George Bush sound file. Wow, what is, that's kind of weird. I got to turn my mic all the way up again. Let me bring it down. Hang on a second, people. Okay, that's good. I like it lower. I like it lower with smoother tones. We are the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We come to you Monday through Friday here on U Broadcast. You can also find us on the Dutch Jones MySpace page, the Facebook page, and the home of everything Dutch Jones, DutchJones.tk. That TK stands for Ted Kennedy, DutchJones.tk. And we come to you at 5 p.m. Pacific time right here from the heart of, well, Central California in the foothills just outside Sequoia National Park. I say that for the new people that are listening. I see we got a couple guests in there in the room. It's kind of a slow building day. We don't have our usual minions, but that's okay. 5 o'clock's a time here in California when people are rushing out of their cubicle and trying to get home, pick up the laundry if they use the cleaner still, get their dinner, not lunch. Why would they be getting lunch at 5 o'clock, Lou? I don't know, Lou. I don't know. Hang on, Lou. I'm turning up your microphone. Say something, Lou.
I meant to say dinner.
There you go. Linner. Of course, Linner. Lunch and dinner mixed together.
Berliner.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Berliner. With us in studio is my lovely child, Anthea. That's not a made-up name. That's her real name. In Yiddish, I think it means one who eats boogers.
Hey.
Hey. No, I'm not sure. It means flower in Greek. But we're going to be doing our regular show today. We've got lots of news. I've received phone calls all day today. People noticing things going on in the valley. So sometimes we might get a little local. Sometimes we might get a little national. Sometimes we might even get a little international. But I try to find things that fit together. Speaking at the ATM.
That's what Rocky said.
I'm just speaking. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's on TV. Obongo's doing this public address from his he wants to look presidential because, you know, his opinion ratings are going, his approval ratings dropping through the floor. And so he's going to do it from the Oval Office. He's like, it's going to be funny. It's going to be like a little kid behind the big desk. It's going to be like Urkel. Somebody let Urkel into the Oval Office, and he's going to be...
He's going to see the top of his head.
He's going to see the top of his head, and he's going to be, I'm doing something about British Petroleum. I'm going to kick some butt. That's what I'm going to do. I'm Barack Hussein Obama, and I'm not a terrorist.
Barack Insane Obama.
Yeah, insane in the membrane. But, yeah, he's trying... I read that article that he's prepping, and there's all these theatrics. They're working on the lighting and everything to make him look good. Who was that? And they're trying to make certain that, you know, he looks presidential because he has not been presidential. And also, remember when they criticized El Jefe Boucher? Every time there was something wrong, he was off playing golf. Well, somebody sent me an email. It was funny. Every time there was a catastrophe, they'd show him on the golf course at the exact same moment. So this guy's playing golf. He's jet-setting around the world on your ticket. You're paying for it. So that he can take his family to dinner in Chicago and France, and you know, I want to know what does a president actually do? I mean, the last several, it seems like they're always going somewhere and getting a free meal. You know, they shake some hands, kiss some babies, offend some, you know, offend some protesters, and that's it, and they move on.
Kool-Aid, though.
I really think it's just a high-profile target. As our dear friend here at church, Fred Bader, says, it's the monkey ringing the bell. That's not a racial slur. It's for any president. The monkey's ringing the bell, making all kinds of noise, clamoring on his cymbals, whatever you want to say, and we're all watching it. And meanwhile, over in the corner...
The golden goose is laying the square golden egg.
What's that from?
You said that before.
Oh, yeah, the golden goose is laying the square golden egg. I don't remember saying that one.
Yeah.
That's a Dutchism, huh? I don't remember. You should be writing these down for me. You should put together a compilation for when I finally, you know, break free of these earthly bounds and bonds, and they can play it at my funeral. But anyway, what I was going with is that they're distracting us by all this stuff. That's completely how they do it. They choose to make us angrier and then all get out over things that don't matter. Not that the oil spill doesn't matter. Tell that to people living in the Gulf Coast. Tell that to the fishermen down there, the tourist industry. Man, I don't know if it's because of that, but we're seeing a lot more visitors up here this year than the last 2 to 3 years. I don't know if people said, well, I'm not going to the Gulf Coast. I want to get all oily. I want to go to the mountains. What's the next best, cheapest place to go? Well, let's go camping. So they're coming up here. We went to the local museum today, and we were looking, and there's people from all over Europe. There's New Zealand, all kinds of stuff.
Texas.
Yeah, Texas.
Germany.
There's all kinds of stuff. A lot of people from all over the country coming here rather than going to the Gulf Coast. I really pray for those people down there. They're going to lose their homes, their businesses, and it just gets uglier and uglier, doesn't it? Doesn't it? I mean, the more they're doing, the more that's being exposed as to what they're doing there. Hey, the ATF got to kill somebody again. It's been a while, at least that we know about. In this case, it was, you know, everybody's favorite class of citizen, a biker gang. And a biker killed in Maine in a shootout with ATF agents. They came at like 6 a.m. in the morning to kick in his door. I still don't understand why these ATF agents go into the guy's home, kicking in a door at 6 a.m. on a known hostile target. The guy's got his wife and kids in there, probably. As we read the article, you'll hear a little more. And of course, he's going to come to the door with a gun. Okay, here we go. Hang on. Wow, we got a call. Hello, are you there?
Hi.
Hello, who's this?
This is Mel.
Oh, hello, Melody. What's up?
Oh, I would love to be listening to your show, but Nicholas switched the power back in his name and turned off our electricity again.
Oh, that's great, because I just got Brett calling me yesterday asking me to go apologize to him because I didn't understand just how mean you people were being to him, that he's an innocent victim.
Yeah, Nicholas, when the police went over to Nicholas' house, well, Nicholas actually had the police come here while we were gone at work,
mm-hmm.
and told them, look, nobody lives here and they're stealing my electricity.
Nobody lives here and they are stealing my electricity. That doesn't make
yeah.
any sense.
And so he put a padlock on there. He had Brett break down the fence, put a padlock on our shut off our sub panel. See, we can't shut off his electricity, but he can shut off ours.
Okay.
We have a sub panel there to show who owes what amount of electricity.
Wow, what an amazing new chapter in this whole thing.
Yeah, because we pay the entire bill for all the property, and including we are the biggest supporters of his station.
Yeah.
And this is how he treats his best supporters.
Well, hopefully we have some crossover listeners. He's probably listening right now. There's a guest in there, and we heard that he's having trouble recording my show, so we know he listens. He ran into one of our listeners somewhere down there in Porterville or something and was talking to him.
I came home from work after working a double shift at about 3:30 today and realized I had no electricity. It was hotter than heck in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing I go is, did I pay the bill?
Yeah.
I thought, I wonder. And I went out and saw this big old note from Nicholas saying that all the property belonged to him and we were in violation of some penal code if we turned our electricity back on. So I go, oh, no, he switched in his name again, and we called up. Sure enough, he did.
Okay.
And so I went to a neighbor's house and checked to see if his station was running, because if I forgot to pay the power bill, well, his station wouldn't be running either, and he would be screaming bloody murder and trying to hunt us down. But no, it was plain just fine. So I knew that he had done some. Yeah. And Brett was the one that did it.
Oh, that's nice. I'll make sure when they call me again, I'll ask Brett why he did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get calls every once in a while from Brett.
Hopefully, when we can get the electricity back on, I'll be able to listen to the reruns.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're still praying for all that over there. I just... he shoots your dogs and then turns off your electricity. That's awfully nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of guy Nicholas is, I guess. I mean, he's showing his true colors in this situation. He's really acting like a Christian man there who supposedly has his own ministry.
If anybody wants to know why in the world Nicholas would ever want to do this, well, my husband put the structure and foundation into this property and the septic tank, all of that stuff, all the plumbing, all the electricity, and about $40,000 worth of work, plus, helped him with his house. He wouldn't have ever been able to get the house or the station built without my husband's help.
Right.
And so once he had that all done, then, we were no longer important to him. But he still, still come over for barbecues and everything like that.
Right.
But he decided last summer he was going to sell it and keep all the proceeds for himself. So that's when he decided to turn us into renters.
Isn't that funny? Because that's the same thing that he says that the guy from Truth Radio did to him. He's going around whining about all that guy ripped him off by all of his work, and then he turns around and sells the radio station license and everything, lock, stock, and barrel, and doesn't give it to anyone who actually had sweat equity built in.
Well, that's what I heard that, but from what Barton Butte tells me, Nicholas had tried to pull some fast ones with the trust.
Yeah, he's just sleazy. I don't want to spend too much more time on it, but people need to know. And I think that's a good first-hand report there. Another update of what he's doing in this incident. Just shows his true colors.
Sure, I kept quiet because I was hoping that maybe he wasn't as bad as, and it was just a misunderstanding, and we could work it out.
Yeah.
But during that time, he did everything he could to destroy a reputation.
Right. Well, I'm pretty sure he's listening
because
he likes to listen, I'm sure he's going to construct. He's going to take your words, edit them, and chop them up and play them somewhere. Put them up on YouTube with a. Disguising his voice, making a fake interview like he did to me. Well, I mean, he's such a punk.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did that to me. I had the pastor call him and tell him to take it down, and I gave him I said, take it down, or you're going to pay for it. And he took it down. He was afraid. So, but okay. Well, Melody, we'll continue to pray for your situation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So we'll
we don't bear him any ill will, but we would really like it if he'd stop.
Yeah.
And just treat us fairly. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, listeners, send him some emails. Let him know that you know what he's doing and that it's counter to what he's putting out on his radio station. This it's supposed to be a Christian radio station he runs over there, but yet this is how he acts to his neighbors and to people that he's in a business deal with. So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you later, Melody. Thanks
a
lot.
Have a good show.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye. Well, that was a surprise, wasn't it? And just another, like I said, another episode of the First Amendment Radio soap opera circus over there that Nicholas runs. Take it as it is, face value there. Let's get back to my article here. Like I was saying, the ATF, it's been a while since they've got to kill any Americans, so here's what they did, but now they're focusing on bikers. Will you not do that while I'm on the air? My daughter is like picking things off of me like a monkey grooming me. I was on the ground earlier today working on one of my vehicles, so I've got like straw all over me. Don't do that, okay? I'm trying to do the radio show here, and you're like picking at me. You're not eating it, are you?
No.
Okay, I was a little worried there. Okay, Old Orchard Beach, Maine. I love the names of towns in the East Coast. Federal agents attempting to arrest two members of the Outlaws Motorcycle Gang. There you go. That's a great original name. We're outlaw bikers. What's the name of your club? Outlaws. Wow. As part of a 7-state sweep, shot and killed one of them in an early morning gunfight today, which is Tuesday. More than 24 outlaw members across the country were charged Tuesday in Virginia with participating in criminal enterprise. A SWAT team from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, and anything they see fit to have jurisdiction over, was fired upon at about 6 a.m. while attempting to arrest Thomas, the Tomcat, Maine, age 59, M-A-Y-N-E, the regional treasurer for the Outlaws, along with Kenneth Cretian, C-H-R-E-T-I-A-N, according to Batfag spokesman Michael Campbell. Now, Maine was killed. Two women also were in the house, but nobody else was injured in the shootout, according to the Attorney General's office. Oh, I bet they're just going, man, we missed a good one here. No kids to shoot. No women to gas and then burn the house down.
No dogs to shoot
and just a stomp. You know, they didn't even get to probably use their armored car, it looks like. The front of the building is still intact. The SWAT team was used because the ATF viewed the suspect as being part of a violent criminal enterprise. Remember that term, violent criminal enterprise. You're going to start using it against the militias. Remember, I told you they test these things. They test the legality, the spin, the amount that the public will accept on the ones we don't like. They'll go after motorcycle gangs and street gangs first. So this is Glenn Anderson is ATF special agent in charge of the Boston office. He said the agents were fired on when they arrived. Well, that's nice. Authorities found a shotgun and a handgun inside the house after the shooting. Maine was one of 27 members and associates of the American Outlaw Association motorcycle gang charged in the indictment unsealed Tuesday in Richmond, Virginia. Now, a federal grand jury charged many of the defendants with racketeering for allegedly participating in criminal enterprise involved in attempted murder, kidnapping, extortion, illegal gambling, and drug dealing. Defendants are from Wisconsin, Maine, Montana, North Carolina, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Virginia. So, you know, I could go on and read the story, but it's just they're feeling their oats again. They got kicked in the teeth with this whole Hutari thing. It didn't go so well for them, so they said, okay, let's back off the militias. Let's go after some other people and see if we can get out there and start the head count up. Now, the shooting happened at a brown shingled home on a quiet cul-de-sac, and there were no outward signs of any motorcycle gang activity. Now, the tax assessor's office indicated that the home did indeed belong to Thomas Main, and despite the shooting, there was no cause for alarm for either residents or tourists visiting the old Orchard Beach area, said Police Chief Dana Kelly, who probably wasn't even in on the loop. He probably wasn't even told about it. It probably just occurred. They started shooting up the house. And it's not like these vans pulled up and he probably started shooting out the door. They kicked in the door, woke him up, and he came like any real man would. You know, I'm not defending if it's true what they've done. Who knows? I mean, we know what motorcycle gangs actually do. I'm not going to make excuses for them. You know, they're not this. Everybody has this. I was looking at some of the comments on this. Oh, the last bastion of standing up for the working man, the motorcycle gang. Now they're scumbags too. I'm like, where have you been living? You know, where did you grow up? I remember when I was a kid in Massachusetts in a little town called Pembroke, the same kind of thing happened. And we were on a school bus while it was going on, and they had to stop us at a roadblock, and then they had to evacuate us from the school bus because the tear gas started to blow our way. That was fourth grade, I think. In Massachusetts, little town of Pembroke.
It's still affecting you.
And it's still affecting me. So, you know, it's not like something new that motorcycle gangs are dealing in guns and you know, stuff like that. And it's just sad that they do that. And it's also sad that we live in a world, you know, that our ATF guys are used in these types of things. And they're going to... the blood's in the water, folks. They got to kill a guy, and there's not this big outrage because he was a biker. Let's see what happens. You know, if you guys want to comment on that or anything else that you know, remember this is like I just had Melody get on for a couple of minutes and slam her evil neighbor. 559-561-8225. Boy, nobody's talking about anything in the chat room, so I'm going to go back to the news. Dinky ding, dinky dinky ding. Where did it go here? I got to go back one. Anthea is dusting the soundboard. Leave the soundboard alone. I like the dust on it the way it is. It lets me know which ones and the adjustments. Yeah, I saw you. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, leave it alone. That way I can look at it and I can see where the settings are. That's what I use the dust for. Here's another one. This one I'm going to spend some time on. One, because it's a Colorado man, and two, because it's just dang interesting. Colorado man went on solo mission to kill Bin Laden, and I have to slow down here because I always accidentally say the president's name. Colorado man goes on solo mission. Stop bumping into me. Denver, an American construction worker, has been detained in the mountains of Pakistan after authorities there found him carrying a sword. Mm-hmm. A pistol, and night vision goggles on a solo mission to hunt down and kill Osama bin Laden. Now, that sounds like Lou when he's heading to the outhouse at night. He takes a sword, a pistol, and his night vision goggles. Yeah. I don't see what's so strange about that. Maybe they don't understand how risky it is to get to the outhouse in Pakistan. Catching bin Laden was Gary Brooks Faulkner's passion, his brother said, noting that the 50-year-old has been in Pakistan at least 6 times, learning some of the local language, and even grew a long beard to blend in. Relatives and acquaintances said Faulkner is a devout, good-humored Christian who requires dialysis and did time in prison years ago. So just like bin Laden, I almost said Obama again, he needs dialysis. A lot of kids grow up and say, I want to be Rambo, you know? Well, he is, said Faulkner's brother, Scott Faulkner, 43. Gary Faulkner arrived June 3rd in the town of Bumbarate and stayed in a hotel there. Now, this is what's funny. This guy's from my hometown where I grew up in Colorado. The Greeley, Colorado man was assigned a police guard, as is common for foreigners visiting remote parts of Pakistan so they don't get kidnapped. They want to protect their tourists over there because of all the money that we're sending them. When he checked out without informing the police officer, the officers began looking for him. According to the top police officer in the Chitral region, Mumtaz Ahmed Khan, Faulkner was found late Sunday in a forest. We initially laughed when he told us that he wanted to kill Osama bin Laden, Khan said, but when officers seized the weapons and night vision equipment, our suspicions grew. He said the American was trying to cross into nearby Afghan region of Nuristan. Now, Chitral and Nuristan are among several rumored places where Osama bin Laden is rumored to be living in the mountains there. I personally think he's a CIA operative. He's probably in Manhattan in a penthouse being well-fed and well-taken care of. That's the official stance of the Dutch Jones radio program. Pakistan's military and intelligence establishment generally deny the possibility that bin Laden is hiding somewhere along the Pakistan-Afghan border, as Western intelligence agencies believe. Now, on Tuesday, Faulkner was questioned by intelligence officers in Peshawar, Pakistan. It's the main northwestern city. He has not been charged with any wrongdoing, because you've got to remember this. Those of you who don't remember, there's like a $25 million international bounty on bin Laden's head. So this is the only guy that took it seriously. All the militaries of the United States, all the Defense Department, all the CIA, all the NSA, nobody took it seriously. One guy from Greeley, Colorado, with a slight tilt in his thinking, took it seriously and did something about it. Now, Scott Faulkner dropped his brother off at Denver's airport on May 30th, and the two discussed the possibility Faulkner would not return alive from his search for bin Laden. He talked about why he was so passionate to find bin Laden, Scott Faulkner recalled, adding that his brother retained vivid memories of the September 11th attacks. He has not forgotten. Here's a guy who's totally bought into, 9/11 was an outside job, right? This guy doesn't understand, that the whole Patsy paradigm. But Scott Faulkner insisted his brother was on a rational mission. He's as normal as you and I, Scott Faulkner said. He's just very passionate, and as a Christian, he felt when Osama mocked this country after 9/11, and it didn't feel like the military was doing enough, it became his passion, his mission to track down Osama and kill him or bring him back alive. Now, his first clue should have been that our military said recently, we're not really looking for Osama bin Laden anymore. We have a Muslim president now. Why would we want to do that? And if we're looking for him, we're actually going to have to pay that bounty to somebody, to some private who whacks him. I don't know if a soldier would actually be eligible for it, but we don't have any money left. We're broke. We can't pay that $25 million. There's no escrow account. So, of course, they don't want anybody looking for him. Now, Scott Faulkner said his brother sold all his tools to finance his trip and was prepared to die in Pakistan. He also said his brother took no weapons and had a valid visa for Pakistan. Scott Faulkner hoped his brother wouldn't be charged with a crime. Now, this guy sounds like a pretty decent guy. He's not aware, he's not awakened, but he's definitely driven. Might be the kind of guy you might run into at a gun show and want to talk to him. Now, I don't believe this was, I'm dying and I'm going to do a hurrah thing. Oh, wait. Excuse me, I skipped a whole paragraph for you here. Faulkner's sister, Deanna M. Faulkner of Grand Junction, Colorado, one of the most beautiful places in the world, said her brother suffers from kidney disease that has left him with only 9% kidney function. But she told the Associated Press that she did not think his illness was his motivation to go to Pakistan. I don't believe this was a, hey, I'm dying and I'm going to do a hurrah thing, she said. Khan said Faulkner told investigators he was angry after the September 11 attacks. I think Osama is responsible for bloodshed in the world, and I want to kill him. Khan quoted him as saying, isn't it great to meet somebody that's just, that's it. Wears his emotions on his sleeve, and no lies, no manipulating, no scheming. What are you pointing at?
There's a big old bird that was coming toward us.
Now. Oh, a bird was going to come in the window? Asked why he thought he had a chance of tracking bin Laden down, Faulkner replied, and this part I'm not going to make fun of. God is with me, and I am confident I will be successful in killing him. We don't know what God really told this guy, so I'm not going to mock that part of it. He said police confiscated a small amount of hashish, enough for a single joint from Faulkner. Okay. I'm worried about him, Deanna, Faulkner said. I'm worried that in Pakistan they won't give him his dialysis, and if he doesn't get it, he's in serious trouble. Bin Laden, who also reported to have kidney problems, has evaded a massive manhunt since September 11th. Yeah, right. Which he is accused of masterminding. There's a $25 million reward for leading to his capture. I don't know if that's dead or alive. Now, Hugo Corral, who owns a barbershop in Greeley, recalled cutting Faulkner's hair a few months ago. He said Faulkner was quiet and wouldn't answer his questions. After the haircut, Corral said he saw Faulkner acting strangely outside his shop. He would walk, then stop, then do something like he was saluting something. It was kind of weird, Corral said. Through the glass of his shop, he said he could hear Faulkner cursing at no one in particular. I feel that way some days when I wake up in the morning. Stacy Steinmetz, wow, I actually know Stacy Steinmetz, who lived in Faulkner's apartment building in Greeley, described him as adventurous. 2 years ago, he recalls Faulkner's planning a hang gliding trip. More recently, he said Faulkner spoke about going to Pakistan to climb a mountain. See, in Colorado, they have guys named Stacy. It's kind of weird. It's a guy, Stacy Steinmetz. Yeah. Yeah, I have a scar on my knee where he shot me with a bow and arrow when I was a little kid. We were about 8 years old, and he shot me. So I'm going to have to, now that I know where he is, I'm going to track him down. No, I'm not going to kill him. Don't say that. What are you trying to do? Get me arrested? No. Were you working for Nicholas? No. You don't say stuff like that on the air. Gary Faulkner was in and out of Colorado State prisons between 1981 and 93. He probably knows my brother. Serving a total of about 7 years on 5 separate stints for burglary, larceny, and parole violations, state officials said. Well, maybe he's just, born in the wrong time. He was supposed to be a swashbuckler back in the 1600s. Now, the Larimer County Sheriff released a mugshot from 2006 where he was arrested on charges of failing to have car insurance. It shows, I can't believe they do that there now, too. It shows Faulkner with shoulder-length gray hair, parted in the middle with bangs to reach the sides of his wire-rimmed glasses. He also has a shaggy black beard with traces of gray hair in it, and it appears to be wearing a camouflage pattern shirt. Well, that's what everybody in Colorado wears. A family photo of him leaving Denver Airport for Pakistan on May 30th shows him with a beard. Faulkner told Pakistani police he visited Pakistan 7 times, and that it was his third trip to Chitral, a mountainous region that attracts adventurous Western tourists and hikers. Unlike much of northwestern Pakistan, it is considered relatively safe for foreigners. Deanna Faulkner said her brother had been all over the world many times but declined to give details of his past trips. This guy's probably a whacked-out mercenary. U.S. Embassy spokesman Richard Snellsire? Never seen that name before, said the embassy had received notification from Pakistani officials that an American citizen had been arrested. He said embassy officials were trying to meet the man and confirm his identity. Deanna Faulkner said her brother usually gets dialysis every 3 days but can go up to 2 weeks without it. We contacted the State Department to let him know of his medical condition and that his family is here, and we love him, they said. I'm sure the people at the over there are like, great. This is going to start a whole new tourist industry of people trying to collect that $25 million. The economy's bad in America. Every small business owner is going to cash out, get a second or third mortgage on their home, and run over to Pakistan with a couple of pointed sticks, night vision, and a compass going looking for this guy. It might be a good idea. It might be a money raiser for those people in Pakistan. I do find it strange.
Next summer, I'm going to Pakistan.
Yeah, it's kind of worthy. He's from a town that I call my hometown because I've lived there since I was 5, off and on. Greeley, Colorado. It's one of the smelliest places in America to live. I don't mean that, you know, just saying that. It actually was. It was worse than New Jersey. There's ConAgra's there with the most, just a huge number of meatpacking plants. Okay, we're coming up here on a break. When we come back, I hope you guys will be calling in. Talk about whatever you want to talk about. I got people calling me during the day telling me that all their National Guard armories are empty. There were people there last month when they drove by, and now they're empty. No equipment, nothing. I got people calling me telling me about just rashes of crime, armed robbery. The economy's striking bad, and people are committing crimes, but it's not being reported. And I've got some firsthand comments from our little community that they're not reporting the crime here. We'll be back after the break. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Thanks for listening.
Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. Liberty weeps, our forefathers stand in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Fight for freedom and the soul of the USA. Right here, right now, it's Independence Day.
You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy.
In the best conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival, escape routes, and plans, and putting together your bug-out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family. Get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. If
for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there. Avenge
me! Avenge
me! It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention!
Government is
an emergency. Repeat, an emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time
for facts. Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
The truth shall set your nappy head free.
What'd you call me? Do that one again. Nappy headed. You lost it.
The truth shall set your nappy head
free. Well, it's the second half hour of 4 half hours of the wonderful, the fabulous, the ever entertaining, and sometimes informative, instructive, and spiritually polarizing Dutch Jones radio program. I'm Dutch Jones. I represent the host portion of the show. I got Lou across from me. He represents the playing the sound effects, the music, and generally just trying to keep everything held together while
that's
we're on
right.
the air. And my daughter, Anthea, along with my son, is helping me today, and she's sitting here eating sunflower seeds and waiting for her big break. I promised her I'd let her talk on the air. Maybe I'll ask her some questions, pull one of those Bill Cosby things and go out there on a limb and ask her some questions and see what she's going to say. But we are live. It is the 15th of June, 2010. And we're coming to you from Central California, Sequoia National Park, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I used a Yiddish yada, yada, yada there. That should make some people mad. And we're just reading through the news, and I'm sharing with you some current events. That's the point of today's show. Now, we got 2 hours to do, so it always helps if you call in. If you got something you want to report, you got something you want to talk about. We had a caller in the first half hour. It was Nicholas Arthur's neighbor. Let us know that he had gotten her electric power turned off illegally. Last week she had called me off the air during a break that he had shot her dogs. So that little melodrama continues on there. It's kind of sad, really, but who knows. Now, everybody, even if you're not into that genre of music, know who the band U2 is, right? The Irish band. When I first saw them, they opened for Joan Jett in Greeley, Colorado, at the University of Northern Colorado's concert hall. I was going to see Joan Jett, being a little punk rocker that I was. I didn't know who U2 was, and they turned out to be this, like, Catholic, Christian, whiny, Irish band. I wasn't even remotely into God at that time, so I could, and you know, and I didn't care, especially for Catholics, because I had problems with a lot of the illegal alien Catholics that were coming into our school for a few months and, you know, just causing havoc. So I didn't want anything to do with them. But later on, they released a song called Sunday Bloody Sunday, and they caught a lot of heat for it. England wouldn't play it because they said it was a protest song. Well, those of you that don't know the story behind that, in 1972, there was an illegal protest going on. 13 Catholic protesters, you know, the whole thing that was going on in Northern Ireland, which isn't going on anymore.
There'd be a special artist if you could turn up the volume a little.
Turn up the volume a little. You mean overall volume? I don't know. Let's see. What's it doing in the meter there?
It's in the green.
Okay, tell me when it hits yellow. How about that?
Still in the green.
Why didn't you tell me that earlier? I didn't know it was low. Okay, look at it. Tell me how it sounds. I haven't turned it down. I'm going up. I'm going up. Okay, it's in the yellow. So I'll back off a little bit there so we'd like to please our listeners. So in 1972, there was this peaceful march going on of Northern Irish Catholics. And me being a Protestant, you know, it's funny that I play a lot of IRA stuff. I believe if they want to be Catholic and they want their own nation, they have the right to do so. Well, on this Sunday afternoon, British troops kind of waded into the crowd, said they saw some weapons, and they killed 17 unarmed people. Excuse me, 13 unarmed people and wounded many more. And there's been demands for an investigation, but it's never... You know, it's nothing was ever satisfying these people. Well, today, actually, the nation of Great Britain, the Empire, actually conceded a few things. So Bloody Sunday report blames British soldiers fully. I didn't think I'd ever see this. Londonderry, Northern Ireland. Relatives of 13 Catholic demonstrators shot to death by British troops on Northern Ireland's Bloody Sunday cried tears of joy today as an epic fact-finding probe ruled that their loved ones were innocent and that the soldiers entirely to blame for the 1972 slaughter. Now, the investigation took 12 years and nearly £200 million. For those of you at home, that's $290 million. But the victims' families and the British, Irish, and U.S. government welcomed the findings as priceless to heal one of the gaping wounds left from Northern Ireland's four-decade conflict that left 3,700 dead. That's a much lower number than reality would dictate. They're saying that it started in like 1917, and they're saying that they're saying it was a four-decade conflict. The Catholics in Northern Ireland have been fighting forever. Now, thousands of residents of Londonderry, a predominantly Catholic city, long synonymous with Britain's major mass killings from the Northern Ireland conflict, gathered outside the city hall to watch the verdict come in, followed by a lengthy apology from Prime Minister David Cameron, he's the new one, in London, that moved many locals long distrustful of British leaders. See what they're trying to do here? Now, the probe found that soldiers opened fire without justification at unarmed, fleeing civilians and lied about it for decades, refuting an initial British investigation that branded the demonstrators as Irish Republican Army bombers and gunmen. Now, Cameron, who was just 5 years old when the attack occurred, said it was both unjustified and unjustifiable. This is unusual for a New World Order government to admit this kind of thing. I'm trying to figure out what the dubious plans are for them doing this. I couldn't believe it. I was so overjoyed, said Kay Duty, D-U-D-D-Y, clutching the handkerchief used to swab blood from her 17-year-old brother's body that day. Jackie Duty, the first of the 13 killed, was shot in the back. Never in my wildest dreams would have I envisioned a British Prime Minister would stand up in Parliament and tell the truth of what happened on Bloody Sunday, Duty said. David Cameron told the world and its mother that Jackie Duty and the rest of the deceased and injured were innocent people, and they were totally exonerated today, she said. One by one, relatives of 13 dead and 15 wounded went to a podium. Huge black and white pictures of their dead or wounded relatives displayed on a massive television screen. Each declared their relief that the demonstrators were found innocent and that the elite soldiers of the parachute regiment solely to blame. You know, I know what you're saying. Oh, great. You know, that's good that they did it. But all these soldiers are now 60, 70, 80 years old. What do you think they're going to do to them? 38 years ago, the story went around the world that there was gunmen and bombers in our streets and that they were shot and killed. Today that lie has been uncovered, said Kate Nash, whose 19-year-old brother William was shot fatally once through the chest. Unjustified and unjustifiable, those are the words we've been waiting to hear since January 30th of 1972, said Tony Doherty, whose father, Patrick, was fatally shot as he crawled away from gunfire. The fact finders rejected soldiers' claims that Doherty had been carrying a gun by digging up photos of Doherty seconds before he was hit and showing he was unarmed. The victims of Bloody Sunday have been vindicated, and the soldiers of the parachute regiment have been disgraced. Their medals of honor have been removed, Doherty declared to cheers. They should be shot. The Bloody Sunday inquiry, authorized by then British Prime Minister Tony Blair in 1998 in the run-up to the negotiations of the Good Friday Peace Accord that year, was led by English Judge Lord Saville. He gave the ex-paratroopers, now in their 60s and 70s, broad protections from criminal charges as well as anonymity in their witness box, meaning when they testify on the stand there, citing the risk that IRA dissidents might target them in retaliation. Okay, so the court gives them amnesty. That doesn't mean that the IRA freedom fighters are going to give them amnesty. I don't understand that thinking. Some legal experts, however, said wiggle room remains for prosecutions and more likely civil lawsuits against retired soldiers, particularly because some of them were found to have lied to Saville. The 5,000-page report is based on evidence from 921 witnesses, 2,500 statements, and 60 volumes of written evidence. Cameron apologized on behalf of the British government and summarized its findings. The soldiers never should have been ordered to confront the protesters. They fired the first shots and targeted unarmed people who were clearly fleeing or aiding the helpless wounded. None of those killed or wounded that day in Londonderry had posed a threat to the soldiers, Saville concluded. Wouldn't it be nice if we get the same kind of consideration for Lexington and Concord from them. That's not going to happen. That they fired first. Seville's conclusions include damning new findings, including that soldiers fired twice at 22-year-old James Ray, once as he ran away, and second, fatally, as he was on the ground. I think there's some great British or Irish songs about James Ray we need to dig up. As he lay there, defenseless and dying, he was deliberately shot again. The Seville report stated clearly that there was no justification for either of these two shots, said the brother Liam. The demonstrators were protesting the internment without trial of IRA suspects. The report said some soldiers fired knowing their victims were unarmed and may have concluded all protesters were tied to IRA factions and therefore legitimate targets. Nothing has changed, has it? Wounded Knee, Kent State, all that stuff that went on in the 60s, in the 70s. Is at least possible that they did so in the indefensible belief that all the civilians they fired at were probably either members of the provisional or official IRA or were supporters of one or other of the paramilitary organizations, and so they deserve to be shot, the report said. So if you even support the militia, because that's basically what the IRA is, it's a militia. Now, I probably have people in the room that are Protestants going, I can't believe you're supporting these Catholics, they're Jesuits. It's their country, they can do what they want with it. The report did find that one demonstrator killed, 17-year-old Gerald Donaghy, was a junior provisional IRA member who was carrying four homemade grenades called nail bombs in his pockets. But it said Dogany was running away when shot and posed no risk to the soldiers. Bloody Sunday justice campaigners long had claimed that the nail bombs photographed inside the pockets of Donaghy's jacket at an army morgue had been planted by soldiers trying to justify their shooting. No, soldiers and police never do that. They don't do it in America, they don't do it in Britain, right? Seville also concluded that former IRA commander Martin McGuinness, now the senior Catholic in Northern Ireland's power-sharing government, probably was carrying a submachine gun during Bloody Sunday, based on what other witnesses' testimony. The judge said, however, there is no evidence existing to suggest that McGuinness had used the gun in a manner that provided any of the soldiers with any justification for opening fire. He should have fired it in defense of his people. McGuinness, who is in sworn testimony, said he was unarmed, rejected Seville's charge. I absolutely deny that, he said. So they're going to have to pepper it a little bit, but I find it hard to believe that some of the IRA people weren't at least armed. I just don't know why they didn't retaliate and save the citizens. And analysis said Seville's findings appeared likely to stir tensions between McGuinness and Protestants in the three-year-old coalition, the centerpiece of the Good Friday peace deal. That's why they came to this decision. There's been peace for 3 years. No one's been fighting in Northern Ireland. But bringing this up, not charging the soldiers, but giving out their names, not exonerating the head of the then IRA Provisional Guard, McGuinness, thus enraging the supporters of the soldiers, said, look, he had a machine gun. See what's happening? The inquiry was originally budgeted for a cost of £11 million and reported findings by 2002. Instead, the final bill was estimated at nearly £200 million, making it the longest and most expensive inquiry in British legal history. Cameron said, Britain would never attempt anything like this again. See? Cameron said Britain would never attempt anything like this again. So if they go out and slaughter civilians again, there's not going to be an investigation. You see what they're doing? See how the New World Order gives notice? Look, we did it for these Irish. Don't come crawling to us again asking for an investigation where soldiers kill the innocent. Irish Prime Minister Brian Cohen praised the report. From this day forth, history will record that the families have always known to be true that they were innocent, he said in Dublin. I wonder if he said it in Dolby. It is our hope that the scale of the inquiry, the quantity of material available, and its findings will continue to greater understanding and reconciliation of what happened on that tragic day, U.S. State Department spokesman Philip Crowley said in Washington. Seville said Bloody Sunday represents a watershed event in the decade-old Catholic-Protestant conflict over Northern Ireland, a British territory now governed by a power-sharing coalition. It drove 1972 to be the conflict's deadliest year, with more than 470 dead. What happened on Bloody Sunday strengthened the Provisional IRA increased Irish nationalist resentment and hostility towards the army, and exacerbated the violent conflict of the year of the years that followed. Bloody Sunday was a tragedy. I sound like George Bush. A tragedy for the bereaved and for the wounded, and a catastrophe for the people of Northern Ireland, Saville said. The judge took evidence from former British government officials, the soldiers who opened fire that day, and IRA members involved in the protest. He ruled that a few IRA men did come armed to the demonstration, but the soldiers fired the shots that started the one-sided bloodbath. The number two army officer in the scene of Bloody Sunday, retired General Sir Mike Jackson, Sir Michael Jackson, the British general, offered what he called a fulsome apology, but described the killings as an exceptional aberration. Yeah. Yeah, tell it to Gandhi. You know, British are known for just gunning down civilian hordes. Look what they did in India. And just in case you're wondering, I hate Britain. I hate England. I will take sides with Irish Catholics before I will take sides with anything English. Yeah, I'm a Jesuit now. Yeah, everybody's going to start calling me a Jesuit. No, we're not English. We speak English by one vote. We should be speaking Deutsch. Over the 39 years of the Army's operational deployment in the province, a vast majority of the some 250,000 soldiers who served there behaved admirably, often in the face of severe provocation and with the loss of several hundred lives and over 6,000 wounded, said Jackson, who was a captain and second-in-command of the Parachute Regiment's 1st Battalion in 1972. He fired no shots that day. Isn't that the way the murderers usually do it? They send people to do the dirty work. Seville's findings declared that several soldiers who opened fire concocted cover stories. I haven't heard concocted in a while. Stories to justify shooting unarmed people in the back. But he cautioned that each soldier's testimony to the inquiry could not be used to incriminate that witness in any later criminal proceedings. What about cross witnesses? That does not rule out the possibility of future criminal proceedings against an individual, but only means that their own evidence in the Bloody Sunday inquiry cannot be used against them, Seville wrote. All families of the dead said that it is too early to predict whether they would file lawsuits against any of the former soldiers. The original 1972 investigation by another English judge, Lord Widgery, took barely 2 months to produce a brief report that chided soldiers for gunfire that bordered on the reckless, but Widgery accepted soldiers' claims that they had been responding to IRA attacks and said he suspected, despite any solid forensic or witness evidence beyond the soldiers' claims, that some of those killed had been firing weapons or handling bombs in the course of the afternoon. Now, I find it interesting that I told you what my views are why they're doing this. It's been too quiet for 3 years there. I think they're trying to kick it up a notch, bringing up old wounds while doing it. Just leave the sunflower seeds down. You have enough, Anthea. No, if he wants them, he knows where to get them. And we forget about these people over there. We forget about them, and we may go, oh, they're Catholics. What do we want? They're a bunch of Jesuits. I'm not that kind of guy. I don't play macro politics in micro situations. The people in Northern Ireland want to boot the British out and don't want Protestants living in their neighborhoods. Why not? I mean, are we supposed to just kill all Catholics and not let them live anywhere? I don't follow that fascist line of thinking. So don't come on the show and tell me I'm, you know, don't send me emails saying I'm, because I support the IRA and I play IRA music.
Jesuit.
What was that, Lou?
Jesuit. You're a Jesuit. Pope
no Pope. Dinner. No dinner for you. No dinner for you. You banned from kitchen.
Pope. The Antichrist, don't you know?
Yeah, the Pope's the Antichrist. That may be. But freedom fighters in Ireland may not give a tinker's dang about, I don't have to say that, because a tinker's dam, it's D-A-M. It's not a swear word. Why did I do that? Anyway, that's where we are. We're coming up at the top of the hour, so I'm not going to start another news story, another topic. But if you'd like to call in with suggestions, 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. If anybody went to my Facebook, tell me what you think of the pictures. I hope you looked at the photos that were there. I got tons of photos on there. Something like 40 or 50. No, maybe not that many. That may be my MySpace page. Oh, excuse me. I need a drink of water. But we're going to see more protests in America where civilians are going to be shot, where unarmed people are going to be shot. But that's only if you're not armed. No, your mom's going to be home in about 10 minutes, and you can have tacos with her. You don't need macaroni and cheese now. You can wait it out, you two. You can eat. I'll wait to eat later. I love having my daughter around, but she just eats like every 15 minutes. She's like a supermodel. She's 9 years old. She's about 18 feet tall and only weighs like 49 pounds. Is skinny as a rail and just needs to nibble constantly. I don't know what's up with her metabolism. Mine was like that as a kid, but I didn't eat as much as she did or she wants to. And hopefully she won't get fat when she gets old like me.
No, so. I can hear that right now because I'm sitting right in front of
you. Oh, you are? Yeah, she's got my sarcasm too, which is good. I'm glad she got something of mine. You know, she didn't get my metabolism.
I have your eyes.
Yeah, you do have my eyes. We got those same cold steel blue gunfighter eyes.
Go for your guns.
Grr.
But yeah, I really look for input. What do you think about the stories I've shared with you? Have you seen stories? I heard that there was some military base that caught two guys armed for bear and fake IDs and everything. I've been Googling it, trying to find it, and it's not here. People email me, people call me. Hey, did you hear about the guys that tried to sneak into a military base to shoot it up on the East Coast? Yeah, tell me about it. The article's gone. So if any of you save that article, please forward it to me to DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. I'm going to go back to the room here. I'm going to go back to Uberad Costa. I know you're hungry. Back down. So, how are you guys doing? What have you been up to? This Saturday, I see we got a couple people in there. Just so you know, show up at noon here at the playground. We're going to set up our little encampment there.
Remember to bring your church ID or else you're not going to be labeled.
There's no church ID, Lou.
There's
We don't have church IDs. We don't have militia IDs.
What about all that authorization we were setting up?
It's gone. We did away with it. We're just going
to
have...
We spent like over $3,000 getting all that authorization to get in the playground.
I decided we didn't need it. I thought it was just too much hubbub. You're just mad because you don't get to wear an armband that says security. Huh. You wanted to search everybody, go through their cars, and pretend you were somebody big.
Nuh-uh.
That's what it was. I even noticed you were going to order that little German helmet, and you were going to put up a roadblock, and so you're not going to get to do it. They're just going to pull up, get out their camping gear, and we're going to have our emergency response family meeting.
I'm going to go in the corner and cry.
I was going to say that. Why don't you go in the corner and cry, Lou? And you actually said it. Lou ordered a knife from
Bud K.
He ordered a boot knife. I didn't look at it. I figure he can order whatever he wants with his own money. But he gets this double-edged dagger with like a five-inch blade on it. I'm like, Lou, those are illegal in California. You can't have double-edged blades in California. He didn't know it. I mean, you know, it's not his fault, and I'm being a bad parent, but it's like now he can't leave. You leave the house with that, you get 6 months in county jail, 14 and above. Get caught with that, so you can't even, you know, it's a knife that he has. So maybe we'll offer it as a raffle. It's a box cutter. Yeah, I can take that on to get on to it. What's the name of the knife? It's a Smith & Wesson. What's it called?
Combat-ready boot knife.
Combat-ready boot knife. That's what happens when you let your kids look at the catalogs. Lord, I hope there is some shade. Yes, it's actually supposed to be cooler on Saturday, by the way, 38, and it's going to be in the park. We're going to mow the grass probably Thursday or Friday, so it's nice, and we'll rake up all the stinky leaves and everything that are there still. I don't think there's any leaves there, but we will make it nice. And yeah, I let Lou play with knives. We do a lot of open hand and knife disarmament
and
training.
Knife fighting.
Yeah, we fight with knives all the time. I'm covered in cuts just because he keeps bringing a real knife to a training.
Yeah, it's from the cat.
So I see it. You don't have to point to it. And what we remember to bring a stove or something. The pastor says we can't have any open fires because the fire season's here. But if we have somebody who has one of those portable, you know, one of those hearths, you know, that people get, we're looking at them. I've got a cinder block hearth up here at my place, so I don't really... But anybody who wants to do that can bring it, and we'll ask, see if it's okay if we can build a fire. Because some of the best stuff happens when you're sitting around the fire at night, in your lawn chair, talking to each other. We'll even move it over onto the road. We'll put the lawn chairs out on the road so there won't be any trees it can catch or the bamboo. And everything's being watered over there right now. I can see that there's sprinklers over there going, so everything's going to be green and lush. So we're going to cook, we're going to sit, we're going to train. Minuteman's going to be there and do some training. Oh, Minuteman's in the room. He's going to help out. You know, he's going to jump in. Maybe if I leave some holes, you know, his expertise and experience. So it's going to be a great little teaching. Right now we got seven or eight people. That's fine. But if other folks want to come up from the church, that's good too. Sunday after church, we will have an open training on heat casualties, you know, heat injuries, that type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's okay. It's the phones. They interfere. That's fine. Auntie is picking up the stuff. So we're looking forward to this weekend, and we're looking forward to actually doing some real training in the heat. So we're going to be back after this break. Hopefully you guys will call in with some stuff, or otherwise I'm just going to keep sharing with you stuff that I find is interesting. And what I find interesting might not be what you find interesting. I want to talk a little bit about making jerky. We learned how to make jerky this weekend. I got some jerk spice for Lou. And I kept saying, Lou, here's your spice. So we're going to talk about that after we come back, about making jerky in a non-collapse situation using your oven, but I'll also talk about how we can use our solar oven or open flame. We're going to talk about jerky when we come back. Mmm, jerky.
As few other men now living know it.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
We'll put out all points bulletin. We'll set roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
facts.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Tell it like it is.
I do tell it like it is, Obama. Oh, Bongo Obama.
Yes, we can.
Yes, you did. You sure did, didn't you? You did. You sure could. Yes, we can. Was we can screw up this country.
Of course.
And he sure did. You did, didn't you?
Barack Obama, wild-eyed socialist.
Yeah. Why didn't you? You know, what's funny is you admitted that even before in your book, and people still voted for you.
Indeed.
Now, how do you feel now that you've screwed up America so bad that we're not going to come back from the brink now?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, I mean, isn't this what your handlers told you to do?
Yes.
Now, are you getting some big reward for this? What are you getting out of it?
Yes.
What are you getting out of it? Hello? Are you still there? Oh, I confused the commander and chimp. So
look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently.
I'm sure you inhaled everything you could get your hands on.
I drank beer heavily.
So where?
I tried drugs enthusiastically.
So that's your excuse for screwing up America? Where were you born? We want to know. Where were you born?
At a local Waikiki bar.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. Lou, I told you not to let him call in anymore.
Later.
Yeah. Just go. Just hang up on him. Hang up on him. I don't want him calling in anymore. Don't disconnect that back phone. I don't want the back line being used anymore for him. You know the rule. Him or Michael Jackson from Hades, we don't want to hear it. Okay? Bad Lou. Bad Lou. Lou bad. Well, we're back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. I just got a phone call over the break, and you'll see a little post in there if you're in the chat room for a woman in our area that does a Bible study and survival-type classes in the Visalia area. She teaches canning and stuff like that. One of her sisters who used to come to our church, it's down there now, is down there doing that, so that's good. I said something about jerky, so somebody said, hey, canning. Canning is a good skill. One of the interesting things about jerking meat is
be a jerk to do it.
Yeah, you don't have to be a jerk to do it. It's been done for years. The hard part is making it where it tastes decent. And people think it's complicated, and it's not. The whole process is to just dry it out as fast as you can without burning it. And the adding of the flavor is a luxury. Now, you always see in the old movies, the Native American camps, the Indian encampments, they have the, you know, strips of meat hanging over and the fire is going. The smoke, the primary purpose of the smoke is to keep the flies off the meat so they don't lay maggot eggs in it. That's why. The secondary of the smoke, depending on the wood you're using, it adds flavor to it. That's where it started. But you can go one step further and you can actually jerk ground beef. You can make jerky of... okay, so they're saying that she teaches canning, jerky, how to make cheese, yogurt, etc. on that link in there. So check that out if you're in the chat room. But you can take ground beef or ground anything, ground chicken, ground turkey, add, just knead in all the spices you want to make it flavorful. And you can use a rolling pin and a yardstick. You take a yardstick, cut it equally in half. And what that does is that gives you... A uniform thickness. You put your meat down that you've kneaded, and you figure out the amounts by trial and error on wax paper with the two pieces of the yardstick on either side of it, and take your rolling pin and roll it out, and you get these long strips of whatever that is, whatever the thickness of a yardstick is, and you put it on wire racks in an oven, a couple hundred degrees, 250, 300 degrees in the oven. And you just watch it, and it'll dry out for you. Now, you can do it with a solar oven. You can do it with reflective heat. You can do it with a campfire. But you can do it. Now, I have to admit, I've tasted some of the Native American jerky that's up here, and they just, throw it over a stick and smoke it, and it tastes terrible. The deer meat is just terrible. I mean, but if I was starving, it's fine there, too. But they've got these kits out there. You can get these jerky guns. It looks like a caulking gun. And except of having a tube, Warland's saying I should do a militia cookbook. My food is so weird. I eat very Spartan. I kind of mix everything together. It's basically mulligan stew. I just throw everything in the pot and eat it. I fry up the potatoes first, throw in whatever I got on top of it. So there's a lot of survival skills that have been lost. And preserving meat is a big one. People don't realize that you can't just run down to the store. And if you butcher a cow or something, where's that meat going to go? You can be like cavemen, and eat as much as you can until you pass out, and then just leave the rest to rot in the sun. That's what Lou would do. But you got to preserve it, and especially if you're in a desert or someplace where you're not going to be able to, take it up above the alpine level and throw it in a snowbank for a while. So jerking the meat is a good way to start, and trust me, it gets as creative as you want to. You can slice it. You can also use a good fillet knife and slice a chicken breast into small slits. Cover it, soak it in marinated in like teriyaki sauce overnight in your refrigerator, and then the next day smoke it. throw it in there, smoke it, dry it in your oven. Now, you do a bunch now, you start experimenting with how long it lasts now in a relatively unviolent environment. You'll have a good idea how long it'll last in a crisis situation. Just think of all the recipes. That's why I tell people, buy every spice you can. Black peppers, red peppers, those kind of things. Anything that will add to it. Now you're saying, well, I don't want to eat jerky. It's bad enough on my teeth now. Well, you don't have to do that. You do this, experiment with this. Go buy some just commercially made jerky. Take it and stick it in a pan and add a little bit of water just to cover it up. Just enough water to cover it up in the pan. It will swell up. Hello, Stacy. Stacy's home. It will swell up, and it can be reconstituted, the meat, and you can add it to stews or whatever you want. Now, it's not going to be as good as the steak was when you filleted it, but a chunk of beef jerky will reconstitute. I found that in here when I was cleaning up. Yeah, I don't know if you need it. Okay. The meat's ready. All you have to do is grate some cheese and tear up a head of lettuce that's out there somewhere that I bought, and you guys can make tacos. They're hungry now, so you guys can eat now. No, I'm making them starve. I fed them at like 1 o'clock. I made them hamburgers at 1, and they're all, oh.
I'm not.
Yeah, Lewis has been begging for food all day.
I was not.
No, that was me.
Oh, that was Anthea. The mail was just the two boxes. I didn't stop there. Yeah, there's nothing in the box. Yeah, just the two boxes. Show Mom your illegal knife. Oh, he's got it concealed under his belt.
No, I don't.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, wow.
It's a cool knife, but he can't carry it.
Isn't it the boot knife?
Yeah, that's the boot knife.
I have one like that. I had one. Exactly like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll give you 6 months in county jail here for carrying a boot knife like that.
Really?
Yeah.
They shipped to California.
It's a California company too.
No, it's Georgia.
Oh, it's Georgia? You lied to me before. You said
it was California.
Oh, but you didn't update me. Don't feed them after midnight, Warlin says in the chat room. No food after midnight, kids.
Yeah, they'll be up.
Yeah. So
that caffeine.
Caffeine, yeah, that was a big mistake last night.
That wasn't my fault with the cheese. Oh, I know.
It's our fault, but okay. So we're talking jerky, we're talking canning, we're doing, you know, what any skills that you can get, you've got to learn them, and there's still time. We're in a period of grace. The Lord has given us some time here.
That was quick.
Yeah, it came fast.
Yeah, I just ordered it a couple days ago.
Yeah, well, it came through the mail, UPS. Did you look see if there's a box out there? I've been watching to see if anybody's coming, but.
No, it's just all that other stuff.
Sorry, you guys have to listen to. Yeah, but this is, you get a little image. We're real people. Yeah, we're real people, and we're doing real stuff here. We're standing in the gap for the Lord, but we still have real family problems, you know, and things. Yeah, there's a bunch of Confederate stuff in that catalog we just got.
So just,
I saw some things I liked. There was some good folding sog shovels in there. We can't have trench knives either, Lou.
Oh, here we go. Grasp a skull gauntlet power. It looks like
Yeah, brass knuckle.
No, it looks like a Wolverine.
Wolverine?
Yeah.
I look like Wolverine. Those of you that look for my pictures, you know, maybe you should look for my Wolverine picture over there. Oh, Wolverine claws on your hand?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that just is just asking for trouble. I'd be poking my eyes out. I'd go to the bathroom and forget I had it on, and I don't even want to talk about what would happen there.
You're going to a banquet.
Wolverine claws that you strap onto your hand.
You're going to the bank with it.
That looks more like Freddy Krueger.
It's Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine, Freddy Krueger kind of thing. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. Sorry for you folks. They're all going, what are they talking about? You people. But jerking meat is not that hard. And it's one of the skills that you should teach your kids, because the kids will be there to keep the flies off. You know, you give them sticks or something to, you know, keep waving around the flies. And, you know, if you keep the fire going with green wood, just make sure you don't use oleander. Know what woods are in your area to smoke the meat with. And you can do fish, you can do anything, and just dry it out as fast as you can. I'm sure there's a scientific formula, like if the temperature's this, you got to dry it in this amount of time. Dry it as fast as you can without actually burning it. And then there you go, and then store it. Buy as much salt. We keep buying sea salt, so we can use it to pack meat in. Now, people don't maybe realize this, but they would preserve pork on ships by packing it in barrels of salt. And as they crossed the seas, they, you know, eventually it would turn rancid. No amount of salt's going to stop it after several months of, you know, in the Tropic of Cancer, 90 degree heat, you know, that kind of stuff. But we've got to learn the old ways on how they did this. How did Little House on the Prairie, Little Laura Ingalls, you know, they didn't run to the butcher shop every day, did they? No. They had blockhouses. They smoked and salted meats and spiced meats. Sometimes putting the spice in there is to get you to be able to eat it, too, because it's a little gamey tasting. Like I was talking about the deer meat a little bit earlier. But find a place specifically where you can set up for it. I've experimented with the solar oven. It works fine. In the summertime, a solar oven gets up above 400 degrees. And it's basically a black box with a double pane of Lexan on it. Double panes. You just make it as big as you want, and you can and use old coat hangers to make little racks and hang the meat in there. It doesn't have to be perfect. You can hang it, out in the open, like I said, and just try and keep the flies off of it as best you can. You know, that's one way of doing it. But now that you have the oven, experiment with it. Experiment how you do it with the oven. And you may want to, your oven may be no good a couple months after the collapse, right? Pull those racks out of there. Those racks in your oven are great for hanging the meat on. We use them over. Somebody gave us a gas oven that was broken. We basically just salvaged it to pieces and just used the racks. DJ, make sure it has iodine in it. Make sure it's iodinized salt. Iodine is. Yeah, I can see why you're saying that, but we can get our iodine from other things. But why would you want iodine in the salt 38 special? Share that with us. The sea salt that I like, just good old-fashioned sea salt. We buy it every time we go, and I pack it in a crate and keep it where we can reach it and get to it. So if we have to run, because preserving food is going to be the key issue. You're going to spend most of your time food procurement, preservation, and preparation, believe it or not. That includes everything from hunting and gardening to canning to cooking to divvying up rations. You're going to probably be doing more of that than security. But what is it that you're going to be securing? First, your loved ones, but secondly, it's going to be your food source. That's what people are going to be coming after. If they're unarmed, they're just going to keep going the other way, but they've probably already got weapons, so they could care less what you have other than how it plays into keeping them from your food stores. Salt is one of the few places you get iodine for your thyroid. Runs on it, right. I know that, yeah. You can get iodine all kinds of ways, too. But yeah, if you've got iodized salt, that's always good too. We also get the regular salt, regular commercial grade salt. But I like getting the big granules of the sea salt and stuff, just because it makes it a little more interesting. And in a lot of the recipes that I found online for survival stuff, it plays it. And don't limit yourself here. If you're a hunter, try and most guys would be like, why would I want to ruin the meat by turning it into jerky? That's their mindset. But survival is more important than impressing the neighbors at the barbecue with that big chunk of elk. What? Don't make faces at me while I'm on the air. Anthea's over here making face. What? Why are you making faces? I know. We'll get to it, Anthea. We still got a whole 45 minutes to fill. Now Lou's making faces at me. See, it's contagious. We're going there. We're going there. Now, there are two types of things when I go to the store and I buy them when I talk about jerky. I see jerky and I see pemmican. I looked pemmican up online. Pemmican is like haggis. It's like they stuff everything in the stomach of the deer. What is that face for, Lou? Are you having a seizure over there? Are you okay? What was that? You made like an old lady face. You like seized up, made an old lady face, and like shook. That was kind of weird. I'm a little worried about you over there. You need more iodine. But pemmican, I don't know how to make it. I don't know if I want to make it. They say you put the meat in the stomach of the animal and you bury it and walk away. That's the way the indigenous, aboriginal people of the North Continent. Yeah, Lou's making the monkey face and sky. No, they weren't all savages. Some of them had very, very advanced ways of survival, and we can learn from them. That's one thing I don't get along with people that mock the Indians in America, because I'm like, yeah, how many attempts did it take to get a settlement to stick in Virginia until the Indians started helping out? Same thing in Massachusetts. Teaching them, hey, when you plant your corn, throw a dead fish in the hole. It'll grow better, so there's a lot of...
What's wrong with that stuff? Did they just try everything?
Native Americans had enough time to trial and error. They survived in the harsh climates, and they moved if they had to. Some stayed in place, and we can learn a lot from their economies that they set up, and I'm not talking about their money, but how they survived, whether trade or planting stuff one year, moving away, and then coming back. Depending on how you plan on defending yourself, that might be a tactic. not knowing what's going to cause the calamity makes us kind of have to, you know, put all our bets on everything, you know, a little here, a little there. But, you know, we'll plant a garden, but if I have to leave it, that's fine. But I'm going to bring, I have long storage seeds that I'm taking with me because I don't know where I'm going to end up. And I may just plant things along a trail. You know, that's the way a lot of the Native Americans did. They had seasonal hunting grounds. And like in the Four Corners, people don't think about this. They were farmers. Sure, you had the Navajo and the Apache running around, you know, eating babies and stuff. But there were groups there like the Zuni and the Hopi. They were kind of an agrarian society. They would plant stuff. Eventually, they got to the point where they were actually doing plots. But they would go along the river, plant some corn, and then next season when they come back, there it is. They banked it in the soil, knowing that it would come back. They took there's evidence that the Anasazi and the people in that region kept turkeys and other smaller animals, and we all know about the dog issue. Sorry to our breeders that are listening, but you know they raised dogs for security and food. Plus, they carried stuff. They're like the perfect gift from God, dogs, aren't they? Now, honestly, I would never eat a dog unless my children were starving. They're much too valuable as security, and they're much too valuable as a beast of burden in my eyes. But given, you know, Lou versus the dog, probably eat the dog. Maybe, depends on the situation. Oh, now, yeah. You're going to bring a knife to a gunfight, Lou. That's real good.
Oh. Come closer.
No, I'm not going to come closer. I'm going to stand across the room, and I'm going to ventilate you while you attack me with a knife. That's why, you know, you don't just carry a knife. Not eating my Goldens. No, I wouldn't eat your Goldens. They're too hairy. 38 special.
Yeah, you got to spend too much time skinning
them. Yeah, no, shaving them. You got to shave them. Well, they'll be warm hides. We went to the museum today and in town here, and it's funny because there were animal hides in the museum, which is funny because, you know, there's a predominantly hippie, you know, save the animals kind of population up here. And the museum's got a bunch of dead animals in it, hides and stuff. And, like, one was a beautiful elk hide, long fur.
Like 5 guns in there.
Yeah, and they had a bunch of rifles and stuff in there. But the hides, you know, there was a deer hide. There was a mountain lion hide with the head still attached. There was an elk hide. And I was explaining to the kids, I'm like, you know, this is what they ate back then in the 1880s. You know, but there's not any elk anymore. And it's not because they were hunted. They did not hunt the elk into extinction. It was the fences going up. It was the houses going up that stopped the migratory paths, and they got stuck in the high country, and they slowly died out. Do not let PETA people or animal rights activists tell you that we hunted the antelope, bighorn, sheep, and elk. The deer are still here. In fact, we live in the migratory route of the deer. That's why there's so many deer around here. You know, they go up high in the summer to stay cool, and in the winter they come down here. That's why we don't see them much right now in our 9,500-degree heat. So if we were the Native Americans in the area, we would follow them. That's what they did. But see, I look out there and I see the turkeys out there. There's still ample food supply here. Acorns. There are lots of acorns here, Olima. And the local Chumash and, I just learned all these today. The different Indians here. If you've ever eaten acorns, if you don't have spices or something to put in it, they are terrible tasting. They have a really high tannic acid in them, and you have to roast them. And first you have to boil them until you leach all the black tannic acid out of them. And then you grind them up into a paste, and they would make their own little breads out of them, like tortillas. And when I had the beef jerky, I also tried that. It's real bland tasting. So you have to have spices, bouillon, you know, whatever you can do to make, you know, make it better, you know. But they would use it to just throw whatever they had into it as a vehicle for other herbs and things that they would collect out here. We live in here. I mean, there's so much food around us. It's seasonal. We have what's called miner's lettuce, which is it's high in vitamin C. You got to gather a lot of it to fill yourself up, but some people survived on that all the time, you know, augmenting it with what little bit of meat they could get up here. Learning from what the first settlers did up here is a key thing to do. Yeah, see, Olima just posted that up there. That's a good. There's a site there, and we've looked at boiling them, but the acorns here are in the fall, are just a critical source. I mean, they're huge. They're long. They're an inch and a half long and pointed. They could kill you when they fall out of the high trees. Hey, did you watch it?
No, this is a different one.
Oh, you got another? Oh, okay, yeah, we've seen that one.
Will you rip that for me?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, he can do it after the show.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, you said something that made me want to rewatch it because I don't want to ruin it, but.
No, he's really an ape.
Yeah, the Book of Eli, he's really a monkey. No, Lou, what is it with you? Why do you always say stuff like that? And then I get the hate mail because you make these racist comments.
Hey, I wasn't being racist.
He's a black man, and you're saying he's an ape.
I didn't know he was black.
You didn't know he was black. What are you, blind too?
Washington's barely black.
Yeah, he's like a macaroon or whatever they call him. Great.
He's Pacific.
Yeah. He's great. Nah, here we go. So, but yeah, there's stuff growing all around us. There's this blue flower. Don't know the name of it. You yank it out of the ground. There's a little bulb on the bottom. Tastes like a potato. Tiny little bulb. But these are the skills. Don't just count on your MREs, your freeze-dried food, and your garage full of beans and weenies and Vienna sausages. What happens if you get moved off that site? You're not carrying it all with you. You don't know what you're going to do. So learn the terrain around you. Learn how to process the foods. Learn how to handle the things like the acorns. There's somebody in the chat room said, I thought they were poisonous. I don't know if they're poisonous, but they're bitter as heck if you don't get the tannic acid out of them. The natives used to roast them in the ashes of their fires. They'd make these baskets and toss the hot ashes in there, and it kind of like a flailing system, you know, like you do to rice. But people that I've checked, survival schools that I've called, said just boil them. Boil them, it'll make the water black, and don't drink the water. Dump the water. I don't know what's wrong with tannic acid. I need to look into that. I know that there's some tannic acid in a lot of different types of teas, but acorns must just be highly concentrated, and they're very bitter. And you can make all your little flatbreads out of it, you know, do that. Find out what grows in your area and use it to landscape your house. Grow herbs right under the nose of your neighbors, no pun intended, but they don't need to know it. Remember the victory gardens of World War II? Why aren't you doing that? You know, you can go out for $150, you can get enough long storage seeds to feed a family of four for a year, $150. They're all over the internet. Look at their legacy seeds. They're not
Alex Jones.
Yeah, Alex Jones has them on his site. We should probably link to some of them too. I'm not making any money off of them, but $150 gets you a canister that's airtight. You buy several of these canisters because what you do is after you get the first crop, you make your own seeds because most of the seeds that you're buying at the hardware store, Lowe's, whatever, they don't create seeds. They're called Terminator seeds. The seed company that's out there produced them in a way that they won't produce seeds through hybriding. So that you have to keep coming back to them. In fact, they're trying to make it illegal to even have legacy seeds anymore. That's a whole other show right there. There's a conspiracy for you. Hold on to it. Don't drop it on the floor or on the soundboard. My daughter's eating a taco over the soundboard, but she's got a plate under it. It kind of makes it sound weird when there's little chunks of cheese down in here, so be careful. So we have a duty to explore these things in our surroundings. And we have a duty to make sure that exploit every possible food source. I'm not saying just rely on what's growing around you. Don't go survivor man on me because, you know, you're not going to produce 4,000 calories. I mean, and that's what you need in a survival situation. And then there's so much stuff. I should have brought the book in here because I knew I was going to talk about this. I've got this old book on wilderness survival from the 1800s, and they talk about rabbit fever. Rabbit, R-A-B-B-I-T, not rabid, rabbit fever. And that's caused when you eat nothing but rabbits all winter and you don't get enough fat and it actually kills you. It's a form of, I think it's rickets. Scurvy is when you don't get enough vitamin C. Rickets is when you don't get enough fat. And it will kill you. So you have to make sure that you have fat in your diet. Look at what the Eskimos are doing. They live in one of the most inhospitable places in the world, the Arctic Circle. But they survive mostly on fat. And yet they live to be like 300 years old. Nobody knows how old the Eskimos are when they go to die because they just go out and get eaten by a giant walrus and a polar bear. They go to the dying hole. They go out to the dying hole and wait for an animal to come and eat them. They go back into the big circle of life. What, Anthea?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. How's the taco?
Good.
Did you get any cheese or anything on it?
Yes.
Okay. Did you get any lettuce on it?
Yes.
Okay, good. You can go eat, Lou.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you got a minute before we have to do a break, so... I'm just trying to put these thoughts in your head so that you have a pretty broad plan. Don't be narrow in your scope. Don't just get that catalog every month and go, okay, what MREs can I buy now? What huge, giant, number 10 cans of beets can I buy to annoy my family and have nothing but beets? That's another thing. Don't get food your kids aren't going to eat just because it's cheaper. I mean, oh, they'll eat whatever they'll eat. You know, you wanna give them a well-rounded diet. I understand that. But, like, if I'm in a survival situation, somebody's giving me a bunch of broccoli, I'm going to start thinking about eating them. You know, beans and weenies. Look at the different things that I know you do. You also smother it in cheese. But look at what's out there. Like the miner's lettuce I talked about, high in vitamin C. Look at other ways that you can get your kids and your picky adults, because they are out there too, I know that. I know adults that will not eat beans. Lewis won't eat beans. And they're like the most perfect food, as far as I'm concerned. You used to like them. That's just too bad, you know. But beans are good food. Hey, Batfag made it in for the last half hour. We're going to be back after the break. I got to move your food to take down the mic here.
I've left my old father, my country, my home. I've left my old mother to weep and to mourn. I am a rebel soldier, and far from my home. The grape shot and musket and the cannons lumber loud. It's many a mangled body, the blanket for the shroud. It's many a mangled body left on the fields alone. I am a rebel soldier, and far from my home. You can drink to your true love, and I will drink to mine. You can drink to your true love, and I'll lament and moan. I am a rebel soldier, and far from my home. I'll build me a castle on some green mountain high, where I can see Polly when she is passing by. Where I can see Polly and help her to mourn. I am a rebel soldier, and far from my home.
Message from your government. Although victory in Europe has been accomplished, the demands on our food supply have not been lessened. You can help relieve the food shortage by preserving your own fruits and vegetables. Home canning is a wartime necessity. Knowing the proper techniques and methods in home canning is important, and you can get expert advice by simply writing the Department of Agriculture, Washington 25, D.C. Remember, there must be no letdown this year. Home canning is one of the nation's most important jobs on the home front in 1945.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message, and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point bullets. We'll send roadblocks everywhere!
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention!
Attention!
Government, this problem is an emergency! Repeat! An emergency!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody!
Heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap! It's time for
Dutch Jones! Jones!
Radio program!
And now for something completely different.
I'm coming to get you.
Who is that? Is that Pastor Manning?
I am James David Manning.
Okay. Thank you, Anthea. So just saying it's fun having a dad that owns a radio station. Don't worry, I'm not going to explain it to her. I don't want to pop her bubble. I'm just one little guy on the internet. I am Dutch Jones, and we're back for the final half hour. We're talking about food procuring, mostly growing your own, collecting your own, preserving your own. The three P's. No, that would be planting, picking, preserving,
and eating.
Yeah, PPPE. I don't know. I'll have to come up with something for that. And it's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. These hanging tomato plants, these, you know, whatever you want to use, that's fine. But the process is still the same. You have to put energy into it to get the food product out of it. And the goal is to put less energy into it than you get out of the product that you're about to eat. Somebody said they don't have good soil in the chat room. They have good clay. Build up a planter system. Even just a good 9 to 18 inches of dirt. You go and buy the soil. Go get it from somebody that wants to get rid of it, whatever. You know, buy potting soil. Put down a thick double line of plastic to keep the weeds out. Put some railroad ties in a configuration that looks neat, and dump the soil in there. Throw some irrigation system dribblers in there and start planting your corn. You know, and also a technique is plant to rotate what's going to appear during what season. You don't want everything to come up at once. It will overburden you if you're in a canning scenario and you have everything. You want to plant stuff in phases so things will become ripe or ready to be picked, whatever the term you want to use is. Maybe in weeks, you know, depending on the climate you're in. We're pretty lucky here. We have a very hot summer, but a very mild winter. We can pretty much grow stuff year-round. Even as cold as it does get, we can we could use just with simple things like plastic, make greenhouses that are huge. You know, that those rolls of plastic are cheap. PVC pipe bent in U shapes with points carved on the end of them, stuck in the dirt. You will have an instant greenhouse as long as you need it. And I don't mean in time, in length and distance. And you'll be able to grow tomatoes year-round. You'll be able to grow just about anything you want year-round in the Central California and South. Now, I know those folks up in Idaho and stuff, it's a little tougher. That's why you got to dig all kinds of cellars and things to preserve this stuff. good old-fashioned holding. And true, you can just buy a bunch of compost and put a planter box or incorporate into your existing soil, Olema says. Learn the patterns of the animals around you. There's a great book by Ragnar Benson that's called Survival Poaching. Batfag in the room said poaching is good too. Great book. Ragnar Benson on Paladin Press, Survival Poaching. Gives you some great ideas there. And it also helps you for hunting two-legged types too. Good way to patrol and stuff. Berries. We've got these berries that just go grow nuts around here. They're invasive, and people spray them and kill them. And I get so mad. I'm like, you know, okay, I understand that they're not a native species and all that, but pick the berries, use them, utilize them, contain them. You know, what's the word? Demand that they come into submission. Oh, it's I can't eat now. I was waiting for the break. Is it? Yeah, just I'll eat it later. I was hoping he could get it before the break was over.
No, I was talking to Frank.
I know. Yeah, you could have just said, excuse me, let me give him some food and run back out. But, okay, that's fine. But you've got to bring the soil and the environment into submission. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to have dominion over the land. Up here, it's deer, gophers, and all kinds of stuff that just, you know, they'll steal our food. So we've got to learn how to do that. If that means, yes, to Anthea says, plant them in buckets. You know, she's been planting them. Fences, give the kids paintball guns, slingshots. Let's say slingshots. Post-collapse society, you don't have time to go out and get CO2. Do everything you can do to give the kids, you know, little slingshots and stuff to smack those deer in the butt when they come around the soil. Everybody saw the yearling. Remember the yearling? Remember that?
When, no.
You didn't see it, Lou?
No.
When the little boy's deer grows up and starts eating the family food and they have to shoot the deer? It's just the way it is. It's the circle of life. Anthea's singing the song. Greenhouses, I touched on that briefly, but that is a very important thing to make. I mean, they stick out like a sore thumb. If you're trying to hide, you know, satellites are going to pick you up. But I don't see why a greenhouse couldn't work in most of the lower 48. You know, if you got to grow mushrooms to survive on mushrooms, then do it. But if you can get the materials now when it's easy, and the problem with that plastic is it does break down. You've got to be in this for the long haul. Don't just be thinking one or two seasons. How are you going to keep greenhouses up for generations? You know, so if you have the resources, build a glass one. It's going to last longer than the plastic. There's greenhouses all over around here because the different nurseries grow year-round for the seedlings and the saplings and all that, you know, different things to help all the agriculture and landscaping out. And I noticed that the plastic only lasts a short time. May only last a couple of seasons because of the UV light. So do some research and see what, you know, how thick of a plastic is going to last how long. You know, a little bit of research now and a little bit of penny spent now may give you 3 or 4 years of greenhouse production. Why not? Why not look into it? Find a location that can be gravity-fed water so you always have a water source. Look into, you know, don't ignore the fact that you're not going to have electricity. You don't want to be grabbing 5-gallon buckets all day long. Remember I talked about the amount of energy that goes into growing? It should be a lot less than what you get out of it. Otherwise, it's you're just going to be going to a slow grind and then eventually cease to exist. You won't have strength to go out and do the work that needs to be done because you're not getting the calories out of the food that you're putting together. You want to eat this taco?
No.
Do you want to eat this taco?
She's not hungry. She's
okay.
Away.
Don't throw food away.
That's what I told her.
We don't throw food away. How many times do I have to tell you that? If you don't want it, I'll eat it. We never throw food away up here. This is what divorce creates. Two families, two sets of rules, two paradigms.
And I told her, I go, you know
you never, I've told you that every time you come here, we never throw food away. There are chickens that will eat that. There's me who will eat it.
That's what I said. You could have given it to Dad.
Yeah, we don't do that up here. I don't want to have to keep reminding you guys of that. Well, you forget stuff all the time, too. You never throw food away because there's never food left over with you. You eat everything. So that's it. No snack for you tonight. No snack at all. You threw food away. Remember that. Don't give her any snack. If we get snacks, she doesn't get any. We don't throw food away here. That's nothing. You have to have rules like that. People who waste food have to be punished. This isn't just, you know, you don't get to leave the table, young lady. It's a matter of life and death, and you have to teach your children that, I mean, I'm glad this teachable moment came up, but she just wasted a bunch of our resources. I'm glad you said you're sorry, but that doesn't undo it. Composting, learn about composting. A great magazine for you to get. It's a hippie magazine. Mother Earth News
magazine.
Is Mother Earth Magazine. Stop playing with the soundboard. Mother Earth. Go sit over there. You don't want to listen. I told you not to touch the soundboard, and then you just started to touch it again. Parenting in action. Sit over there. Mother Earth Magazine. I mean, they got everything from chickens to how to build solar ovens to everything. You got to subscribe to it. Now that we've got a little money coming in, I may subscribe again. I used to go to the library and read it and Xerox stuff out of it. It's got to be basic, and it's got to be easy to do for me to understand it. Huh? What are you doing?
That mouse was buried underneath stuff.
There's a mouse on the table? So fun doing a show in your kitchen. Everybody tries to interrupt it with their own little outbursts.
I'm not.
Lou, you interrupt the show in your own special way. You're special. But back on the topic here. Also, take a look at how you're going to be preparing the food. If you're going to be able to cook it, or maybe it's just going to be all raw foods. What are your resources going to be? Are you going to be able to have a communal fire? Are you going to have a bigger group where you're going to have a communal garden where everybody works? People hate it. Communal, that's communist. Or is everybody going to have their own family plot? You have to decide that now. It's just a family. That's easy to do. Everybody works together for the common good of the family, and that's not communism. That's family. But you've got to utilize different people for their skills and things. And I talked earlier about use the children and the kids to get rid of the rodents. The little kids and the children, and maybe even the elderly. Let them do the gardening while other things are being done by more able-bodied people. You don't burn out people. You don't waste skills in that kind of post-collapse economy. You want to be a wise steward of what you have and who you have. And you've got to sit down and be thinking of those things now. You have to create a book, a great big book of what you're going to do. And that's what we have to do. We can't shy away from this, hoping that it's not going to happen and that our freezers are going to keep working and that the store is going to have an ample supply of things delivered. We can't keep going that way. I know most people listen to this show or these types of shows or better shows than this don't do that. But today I was looking at it, and we were walking around the little grocery store here, and I was just realizing these people, they come here every day and buy exactly what they need for each meal for that day. They don't even have a day's worth of food. They got seasoning. They got cooking wines. They've got some bread. But they don't have core elements to putting meals together. They come in every day to the butcher shop and get their cuts of meat. They come in every day and get their fresh vegetables. They come in every day and get their canned needs. And that may be a really nice way to live your life. You know, that may be a metropolitan or cosmopolitan way of living. But it doesn't make any sense. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable is a good way of putting it. And we have to impart this type of knowledge on our children once we learn it again, because we lost it from three or four generations. Lou found that little commercial from World War II for the Victory Gardens. That generation to our generation, that knowledge level has been lost. People back in the 40s, every housewife knew what to do, you know, to put meals together. They knew how to grow gardens. They, you know, there were these massive programs back then by the government.
SOS.
They're not doing it now. Yeah, we'll just all eat SOS forever. I could live on that. Cream of mushroom soup and all different, you know, I don't care if it's rat. As long as it's in cream of mushroom soup and it's on toast, I'm happy. Toast or biscuits, right? And what kind of gravy you got? We got brown gravy and we got gray gravy. What do you want? That's pretty much it. I could survive the rest of my life on that. I don't know what my body would do, but psychologically I'm fine with that. Give me a bunch of seasoning, red pepper, black pepper. They make brown pepper. They should. White pepper, I don't know. But every time I go to the store, we're just stockpiling different spices because I know the food's going to taste terrible. I've designed my palate to like hot, spicy, tangy, all those things. So buy things to marinate in. You know, either powder that you add water to or actually in the jars, depending on how much space you have. I love teriyaki. High in salt content will make me drink a lot of water. Get all, you know, no MSG. Get as much teriyaki as I can get, and I'll be happy. I'll soak mice in it and then barbecue them. And as long as it tastes like teriyaki, I'll be fine. Batbeck says, hey, a government program that was actually worth a crap. Yeah. During World War II, there were a few things. But, I mean, you saw it played out here, and I didn't plan this, you know, with my daughter throwing the food away. But that's the way our country thinks. We're a throwaway society. Mm-hmm. Eat half a burrito, pitch it. You know, even people, they don't even do leftovers from restaurants really anymore. Maybe that's changing now with the economy, but, you know, you don't see people going, oh, that's okay. I watch these things. I am an observer of the human species. I will sit in a restaurant and see what people do. Oh, no, I don't want to take it. I just, it's too many calories. Well, then order half a serving. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gone to a restaurant and said, man, this burrito's too big. Can I get half the serving put in it? People look at you like you're nuts. 38 Special says we're a disposable society. That's right. We are a disposable society. People drive cars for 5-6 years before they even get them paid off. They're ready to move on to the next new car. Well, there are people like me under here that are ready to take those cars and do what we can with them. What is she doing?
She's knotting up her hair.
Yeah, don't knot your hair. I love the thing 9-year-olds do. I've got Lou's here, a 14-year-old boy, and he's...
I knot my hair all the time.
Yeah, he's got a shaved head. He doesn't knot his hair, but he doesn't do a whole lot like a normal kid, which is good and bad. And then I get Anthea a couple times a year, and she's like a normal kid, and I forget what normal kids do, how they're fidgety and... And she's staring at me now. She's all embarrassed. But she's a normal kid, and she does normal kid things. She's normal. She's just a normal kid sitting here. She's bored, and she's trying to, you know, come up with something to do. Well, that was before you started disobeying me. Are you ready to come back over here now? See, watch this. Okay, come back over. Now, remember, you need to be good. You need to listen. You need to obey the family rules. She's mad, or not mad, she's hurt because she likes to talk. She's a chip off the old block. She's like me, and she wants to talk. So now she's all, so do you like being up here with us? You don't have to lean in, just talk.
Yeah.
How different are we from your family in Napa?
Well, up here I get to go shooting a lot. I get to hang out with my dad.
What about eating? Don't you miss going to restaurants every night?
Not really.
So do you eat a lot of restaurants up there in Napa?
Not always.
Every time you call me, you're at the Marie Callender's.
Not really, but usually I eat, like, my mom will make, like, spaghetti and stuff, like dinners you usually have somewhere at a restaurant.
So, do you eat, like, a lot of ramen?
I don't eat top ramen, but I eat, like, we'll have spaghetti. Sometimes we just have TV dinners.
Yeah, a lot of TV dinners. Well, your mom is very smart and everything, but she was never a very good cook, huh? Yeah. Who makes better hamburgers? Mom over there or mom in Napa?
Mom over there.
Yeah, Stacy. Yeah. Stacy, mom. We always like to say your birth
mom.
Because
my other mom up in Napa, she doesn't even make hamburgers.
She refuses to make any. She doesn't like meat, does she?
Well, she does like meat. She'll eat hamburgers sometimes, but she doesn't make them. But I do know something that she does make.
What?
French toast.
She makes French toast.
She makes the eggs, all the batter and stuff, when my stepdad is putting it on the pan.
Yeah, she doesn't like to be near the stove. She got burned as a kid, so that's why on the stove. Yeah, she's got to get back in the saddle and keep going.
Well, recently she did make me blueberry muffins.
Now, do you guys ever go camping or do anything outdoorsy?
Last time we went camping was a long time ago in Canada when I...
Did you sleep outside or did you go to a hotel or a lodge?
We slept in a motorhome in the tents, and that was a bad memory.
It was a bad memory to sleep in a motorhome? Why?
No. I didn't sleep in the motorhome.
What's wrong with the tent?
I say that I overate.
It was stinky in the tent?
I overate, and then it started puking.
You puked in the tent.
No, I puked on the bed in the motorhome that we were renting.
Well, that's what happens when you do a motorhome. So when we come up here and we sleep outside just on the ground, what do you think of that?
It's fun, but I'm just afraid of the bugs.
The bugs, yeah, the bugs. I admit, I don't like the bugs either, but I like it. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you had to live in a great big, nice, expensive, shiny house in Napa, or down here in a lean-to down by the river where you had to catch your own food every day and fight off grizzly bears for survival, what would you rather do? Be honest.
I'd rather live down by the river and wrestle grizzly bears.
Yeah, there you go. That's my daughter. Thank you very much, Anthea. I hope you guys could hear that. I just wanted to show you that even if your children are far away, if God has put you in that position or you have put yourself in that position, the things you teach them, and I know she's telling me what I want to hear, you know, don't send me the email, but at least we can instill in our children when they're away a sense of perseverance, a sense of self-worth. You can go ahead. You're done now. And that the way America is living today and now is wrong. It may be cushy and comfortable, but it's not very nice. What, Anthea?
Can you also say that there's no such thing as VCR dinners?
Somebody asked if there were VCR dinners. She said she doesn't know about them. Yeah. Around here, if we were laptop dinners, and you know, three of them are being used to do the show, and Stacy never gets to use her computer anymore because she's bringing home the bacon. She doesn't fry it up in the pan. I do that. So that's what we're doing. So.
Any comments about that?
Yeah, she doesn't. I try to do all the cooking now that she's actually out earning a slave wage for the cause, but. So that's what we're doing. So I'm just trying to teach my kids some good old-fashioned values. What is that? Where's the phone? Right here. It's on the I set the phone on the other phone. That's why. Let's see. Is somebody trying to call me?
Bad reception.
No, it's not bad reception. It's interference. The phone is telling the tower where we are. So that's what it's doing. See, there it goes again. And it's such a strong signal that it interferes because of all the wires on the table, aren't you? So we do what we can do. We try to instill in our children, like I said, a sense of desire to serve the Lord and to just that no situation is insurmountable if you just apply your faith and your will towards it. You know, you rely on God, but you also have to have the skills and the knuckles. You know, you got to skin some knuckles to get things done. Boy, this is annoying. I'm going to put it even farther away. Put it clear across the room and see if it stops doing it. And every day we try to find new things to explore and learn about. I don't know everything. I never said on the show that I'm an expert. I get people say, "Oh, you're a survival expert." I'm like, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I am just sharing with you what I am learning throughout my struggle and what I do for the holy cause of liberty." This training that's coming up on Saturday, I'm just going to relay to you what I've learned from other people. I have invented very few things or systems for survival. And when I think I do, I read a book 10 years later and go, "Oh, that's where I got it from. I didn't come up with that." So it's a humbling experience. And no matter where I go, it sounds like an Atari game. It sure does. It's just the phone trying to reach the. It's saying in range, out of range of the tower. That's what it's doing. You know, whatever they say. What do you want, Anthea?
Can I just tell you one thing?
What?
I'd rather be homeschooled down here. Then go to a public school up where I live.
What's wrong with public school?
Well, at my public school, kids would make fun of me and be mean to me. So I'd rather choose to be homeschooled than go to an original public school.
Lou, you're homeschooled. Do people make fun of you?
Yeah.
See, it doesn't really go away.
It's more bad than public school.
Yeah, it's pretty harsh. You're the smartest and the dumbest kid in school.
Hey.
You're the toughest and the wimpiest.
And you're the
getting homeschooled, you can get out of school early.
Yeah, but it's a lot harder.
I
actually
care.
Teach that. You don't care? You're pretty smart.
I'd rather be smarter.
Yeah, you'd rather be smarter. School is preparing children for prison life. I've been saying that since first grade. That's what Batfag said, and it's true. I've always said it.
Do you have any weapons?
Yeah, it's teaching you how to be submissive dang!
Throw it out the window.
I'm going to pitch it out the window. Here, run away with this phone. We've only got a couple minutes left. We've got like one more minute left of the show and the phone. It's the FBI. They're probably scanned. We're being scanned, everybody. They're trying to jam us. Is there somebody on there?
No.
Take it out of the room. Go. It's not that phone. It's yours.
What?
It's Lou's right here. Turn it off. Yeah, your phone does. Wow. Okay, it's not the phones. We are being scanned. We are definitely being scanned then. So whatever that was, probably the drone flying over us. No, I don't know where her phone is. So, well, that's pretty much it. We ended on that lovely note about homeschool versus, but you never know what you're going to get with the Dutch Jones Show. We're not sure if there'll be a show tomorrow. I have to go to a repair shop tomorrow with one of our amplifiers and find out why it's not working for our FM system here. So we're going to go, we're probably going to go down to work with Mom and spend the day down the hill. So please, please, you know, don't forget about us, even though it'll be a repeat tomorrow. Yeah, it's gone now. So we'll be back on... Man, I got the hiccups really bad. We'll be back on Thursday. No show tomorrow because we got stuff we got to do. And I just want to thank you for listening. And I want you to never forget that the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but the victory belongs to the Lord alone. And may the God bless you in all you do in the holy cause of liberty. And don't leave the kids out of it. You see what we do here. We integrate them into our daily plans, even when they're only here, you know, a couple days a month or a couple weeks a year, you know, over the summer. We do what we can do. So we'll be back. Thank you.
And
what?
Also, just for good advice, living up here is really fun.
Thank you. The tourism board thanks you.
I've heard him say it's the price you pay. You give your life to live your life and leave it like a ball of flame. Riding and a hiding and a running with Jesse James. In a Kentucky bank, I watched his eyes. They were hard as furnace steel. He'd bust through the door with a 44, spinning it like a wheel, like a wagon wheel. You never could tell what was in his head or what he'd plan next time. If we're fighting for a forgotten cause or to keep our pockets lined, we don't really mind. Hell, we don't mind. They either live poor outside of the law, then they run you down, gun you down, and put you in the hall of fame. I've heard him say that's the price you pay. You give your life to live your life and live it like a ball of flame. Riding and a hiding and a running with Jesse James. They either live poor outside of the law, then they run you down, gun you down, and put you in the hall of fame. I've heard him say that's the price you pay. You give your life to live your life to live it like a ball of flame. Lighting and a hiding and a running with Jesse James. We might have lost the war, but we're going to end up with an awful lot of Yankee money before this thing's over.
That's what you gotta do, because if you don't kill me, I'm gonna kill you!